Welcome to Witta Digital's Unsupervised, a podcast series that brings you personal perspective from the front line of modern visual effects. This is a closed-door session, so come on in and shut the door behind you. My name is Maxwell Barrett, and today we'll be discussing Jumanji, The Next Level. We have Simon Duncombe, Animation Supervisor.
I just obviously take care of the animation side of the project. Anything motion, really, is my sort of realm.
Also with us today, visual effects supervisor Ken McGaw.
We work very closely with animation, with Simo here, and all the departments just kind of spearheading the overall direction of the work to try to meet the client's brief, make the clients happy, and produce as best work as we possibly can.
And lastly, we have Mark G, the additional visual effects supervisor on this project.
And not to be confused with Mark Breakspear, who was the client-side VFX supervisor. So it got a little confusing when there was two Marks on the show. I came onto the show a little later, and it was a big learning curve for me, but it was just a lot of fun.
Since you were the one on set at the start, I'm just going to throw a question to you, Ken. What was it like?
The shoot was actually very challenging in a lot of ways. Hugely blue screen, and not much frame of reference that is stationary. The bridges are constantly moving, and they're quite spindly. Lots of ropes and wires. Lots of head scratching and head shaking when we saw what we were shooting, knowing that we're going to have a lot of fun with it in post.
Because like 90% of the monkey bridges sequence was in a studio, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was on everything in the middle of the gorge was in a studio with surrounded by blue screens, blue carpet, blue everything. Only the end bits, the A side when they first approach and the B side when they land, was on a location in a quarry in Georgia. It proved to be very, very challenging. I think in hindsight, we might have done some things different, but it's relatively unique in the way it was shot and what we're trying to achieve. So we went with our best instincts, and in the end, it worked out.
Yeah. Considering there were so many ropes on all those bridges on those blue screens, plus lots of motion blur and moving bridges, moving cameras, all that sort of stuff. Were you bracing yourself for a lot of comp work? Did you realize how much comp work there would be when you were shooting it?
We knew in advance to be a lot of comp, a lot of roto, and quite a bit of paint as well. The real slap in the face with it, though, was when we got a new show questionnaire from all the departments. One of the departments had an example of gauging how difficult the plates were, worst case being Jumanji, and best case being some other film. And it's like we're already used as an example for worst case scenario for blue screen or green screen plates. And off the back of that, we knew that we had to come up with some efficient ways to handle it. It's a constant trade-off. When you're on set, most decisions you make are a trade-off between comp, camera, or roto. And you know that any decision you make is usually going to screw one in favor of the other. And so you kind of say, who do I like more? Which is not really true. You just, who do you think is going to be able to handle it in a more efficient way without as much pain? But honestly, on this film, it was very much like trying to choose who your favorite child is, because the compromises were pretty horrendous. In the end, we came up with this ropo system. We knew there's no way we'd be able to extract them from the plates. We had to reconstruct them, and the usual way of reconstructing them would be actually having roto for all the tiny little ropes, which would be horrendously expensive to do. And so we came up with a system where they could do cheap and cheerful roto a lot simpler, and then reconstruct ropes with texture from that. And it got pipelined in a way that made it relatively automatic. In the end, I think Paint and Roto actually had a lot of fun on the project. It was a lot of work, but they seemed to enjoy it.
That's cool. So they were basically keyframing a spline across where the rope should be, and then Ropo was running along that line and adding in the...
So rather than doing a closed shape around it, they would do an open spline, and that allowed them to texture it. Whereas if it's closed, they wouldn't be able to texture it. And it would be more than twice the work doing it the other way.
It was really handy just to have it within comp rather than having to go to the traditional methods of getting ropes modeled and textured and lit. It just simply meant that we could just lay it out in comp, and if we needed to replace a rope, the compers could do it there on the fly. So that made things a lot quicker and a lot more efficient, which is what we certainly needed on this show.
Yeah, definitely. It was a lifesaver in the end. I'll ask you, Simo, what's your take on the tone of the film, since largely animation had to set the tone for everything else, and it had to fit into the tone of the film?
I suppose so, yeah. I think the aim was to still make the mandrels really scary, even though it was a comedy action film.
Those are mandrels. We should go.
Go!
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 And having seen the previous Jumanji film, I was excited to be working in a comedy action film rather than a serious action film, which hopefully meant that the content was going to be a little more funner to work on and taken a little less seriously. You're still doing it as good as possible, but I think there was also a fun aspect to it. There wasn't that same amount of criticism on the reality of the situation, I suppose, which meant that we could kind of experiment with actions and set up and that sort of thing, which was cool. Yeah, it was a fun tone to play with. I think we had to pull ourselves out of the realism in some of the motions sometimes, particularly when Bravestone kicks that monkey off Ming.
Into the credits.
The credits.
Come on!
As you guys know, we had multiple versions of that, and we were doing the realistic version over and over until it was like, no, we need to just really, you know, scoot him off screen. And then and there's other sequences in the film where Bravestone's, you know, beating up a bunch of bad guys, and clearly they're just being thrown around like, you know, ragdolls. So there was those elements that we had to kind of pull ourselves into, but it was a little tricky for us because we always sort of start in reality. That's where all our experience sort of is based in. But it made it fun, I think, generally, yeah.
One of the first clues I had that we're going to have to straddle comedy, reality, and fantasy, video game fantasy, was from the very beginning, we got the artwork, the concept arts for the mandrels, and so I started looking into mandrels, started researching them, and the first thing I noticed was mandrels don't have tails. But the concept art for our mandrels did have tails. And I brought that up, and it's like, no, that's a deliberate design decision. They are breaking with reality deliberately to place it squarely into the video game world, but want to keep it looking real and being scarily real when it needs to be. Yeah, the normal rules of engagement are a bit blurred, and so you kind of have to find your way through it.
Yeah, thankfully we didn't have any mandrels swinging off tails or anything like that, because I know that idea was floated around in the early days, but we managed to avoid it. Yeah,
I may have been the one that made that suggestion before I discovered that only New World monkeys swing from tails.
New World monkeys.
Oh, wow. Yeah, apparently okay. Old World monkeys don't swing from tails. Only New World monkeys do, according to Wikipedia or some other website I read. So therefore it must be true.
Yeah, clearly.
But there's plenty of bridges to swing from, so we didn't have to worry too much about that. And that was the fun thing. It was like, Simo, how did you deal with so many mandrels?
With a bit of difficulty at the start, we have, a traditional approach to dealing with lots of characters in these scenes, right? There are lots of puppets and there's lots of bakes for the creature guys down the pipe, and that can be slow when you've got scenes where you've got lots of these elements. There was lots of help from different departments to try and come up with something that we could feature many mandrels in the context of every shot. So we came up with a workflow where we could sort of basically recycle as much motion as possible. From some early tests, and particularly for the trailer, we've got a shot where we've got, I think, about 8 different bridges, and that's all sourced from 11 mandrels on one bridge for about 100 frames of motion, and that's the same bridge just used multiple times and just offset in time. So it looks like it's all unique motion on 8 different bridges, but it's all just recycling the same stuff.
And we call those vignettes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so we laid those vignettes out into the scenes. What was the maximum number of mandrels did we have in one shot?
Just over 300, I think.
300?
Yeah.
Those thousands throughout the whole sequence.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. For the total sequence, I think we rendered just over 10,000 mandrels.
Wow. That's crazy.
And 90% of those were recycled, so we avoided a lot of creature bakes for the creature team and fur processing and all that sort of stuff. I think there was a lot of time saved, and I don't know if we would have been able to do it the old way.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about the vignettes was it wasn't only the mandrels, it was also the bridge. We had to have dynamics with the bridge. We dressed each bridge with moss and debris, and we also had effect sims of dust coming off when the mandrels were running over the top. So each vignette was quite complicated, but it just sped up efficiency by so much.
The bridges actually were the hardest thing to render.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because you wouldn't know it, but the bridges themselves are furry creatures. But they...
Because they're covered in moss. And
they're covered in moss. Right. There's different layers of moss. Some of the moss in there is actually really detailed, and it's hierarchical. So it's not just individual strands of hair like on a creature. It's little, almost like little trees for everyone, and so it can be very heavy to carry around and to render. I think most, Mark, you can speak to this better than I can, but I think most of the background bridges had all the MOS turned off.
Yeah, we did. We to get it efficient as far as rendering wise, we had to turn the MOS off on a lot of the background bridges and only used it for the hero bridges. It sped things up considerably, so it just had to be done.
Yeah, the bridges ended up being just one of the featured characters of the sequence in addition to the mandrels. In fact, there's one moment where our client Mark, in his infinite humor, had suggested that they gave us the work, Weta Digital, because we're known for our bridges, not for our monkeys. The monkeys are secondary.
That's right.
There were, in addition to moving monkeys, there are quite a bit of digidoubles in there as well, and not full digidoubles, but also part replacements and head replacements and.
Yeah, I don't think there's a film that goes by these days without some stunt double face replacements.
Well, there's hardly a film that goes by without a rock face replacement.
That's right. Yeah, there was some challenging close-ups on the Rock, actually, where we had to put his face on a digi double, and it's, you know, full frame right in front of us. I think we all had our challenges with getting the Rock's face looking, you know, exactly like the Rock.
Everyone's so used to seeing what he looks like.
Yeah, exactly.
As soon as it's not right, everyone notices.
Yeah, yep. That being sort of the worst case scenario. The rest of the sequence was, yeah, your typical, is it the character's name, Ruby Roundhouse or something like that? Yeah, you know, we've got her doing backflips and dropping from the sky and grabbing onto a breaking bridge and swinging down to another bridge below. And
well, we even have that shot of Ruby where she's in camera, but there are so many wires and rigs on her that we decided to completely replace her lower half with a digital version of her.
Mm. Oh, when she's getting picked up by one of the
mandrels? Yeah, she's thrown off the bridge, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a really interesting shot. We did that, so we basically replaced the lower half, and we were able to sculpt the mandrel handprints into a stomach to make it look like she had the mandrel had more of a grip of her, and you know that totally sold the shot. And you wouldn't really notice it; no one would really realize that was the case, but we pulled it off pretty well, I thought.
Oh, yeah. The client did notice that her belly button was in a different position.
that's true, but that's only because they saw the plates originally.
The funny thing was we had to avoid was mandrel deaths. Humans
were allowed to kill, but
mandrels
weren't.
That's right. So that was a bit disappointing from an animator's perspective because we had lots of creative ideas for knocking off mandrels and seeing them sort of crash land on rocks and bridges below. But that was
a frequent note we'd get back from the client. So they'd come back with annotated images circling monkey suicides, they called them.
Yeah.
It says, you know, no monkey suicide there, no monkey suicide there.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't deliberate in some cases as well. It was just because of the way the vignettes were that one monkey would be jumping from one bridge to the other, but there was no bridge to jump to.
Yeah, that's right. So it clearly looked like it was just, yeah.
I like to think that's a tribute to how well our monkeys look, is that they were worried that the Humane Society would get up in arms, or that audience members would be upset about monkeys being harmed in the making of this movie.
That's true. And that was a particular shot at the end of the sequence where, what's the character's name on the horse?
Seaplane.
Seaplane rocks up to the rescue and he's knocking over all the mandrels. Yeah. And he has to stomp on one at the end to sort of, you know, scare off all the others. And we were killing that one mandrel too brutally for far too many iterations, and we had to keep bringing it back, and it was hard to make it look like he was clearly knocked over and scared and not feeling like he could potentially be dead. He had to look like he was hurt but not hurt at the same time, and that was tricky as well.
And that was the funny thing in the reviews. Mark Breakspear would have a name. He would name the mandrels as well. He'd say, oh, Cyril getting knocked over here, we don't want to kill him, and things like that. And in the end, he started naming it after the artist. He'd see the artist's name on the slate.
That's right. Yeah.
So it was such a fun element. Like client calls, you know, you sometimes you dread going because, you know, you're presenting work to the client, and you know that you're going to get some either good notes or bad notes back. But whatever notes we got back, we just knew it was going to be a really entertaining call.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was just a lot of fun. And, you know, he was great to work with.
Yeah. In fact, I've never worked on a show where the artists religiously watch the recordings of the client calls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Which was perfect for us, because as supervisors, you don't need to reiterate the note because you know the artists have watched the call and can get exactly what was mentioned on their particular shot.
Yeah, a recurring comedy theme in the client calls was any discussion about monkey butts. Because, I mean, it's even a line in the movie.
Note the distinctive and colorful pigment around their face and buttocks.
We decided, well, it's part of the script. It's one of the key features of the mandrels. So we made the monkey butts fairly anatomically correct.
Yeah, that's true. Right. There was a lot of detail.
Yeah, there's definitely a puckered anus in there.
No, he put me in tears. Yeah, Mark Rexby for a good reason, because I was laughing so hard in some of those calls. Made the whole process, yeah, really enjoyable. One of my favorite projects here at Wido, I believe.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
He was great to work with, and he was very much collaborative, very inclusive. Went to great lengths to explain the motivations, the politics behind a lot of the changes or notes that we're receiving, and
so he understood what we had to do to get what he wanted. So yeah, you know, it was really good to have a client like that.
Yeah, I'd like to just, you know, give a big shout out to the animation team, motion edit team, and the crowds team at Weta Digital for all their help on Jumanji the Next Level. Thanks to those guys and everyone involved for making it such an awesome project and delivering stuff that I'm sure lots of audiences will enjoy.
Same goes for all the shots, the compositing, the effects, the layouts, the modelers, the shaders, look dev. There's so many departments involved to make this film, and it's incredible how it all comes together in the end.
Yeah, if you watch the credits, if you stay long enough to see the credits, you'll see all those names and how many people it takes to make these things.
And of course, goes without saying that Roto, camera, and paint all went into this assuming the worst, and I think they did an amazing job of being efficient about handling such complex, difficult work. And everyone, especially Comp, with a smile on their face.
Yeah, that's right.
Morale was really high, given how difficult the work was.
I know. It's just one of those shows that everyone loved working on in the end, which was really good.
Cool. So bring on Jumanji 2021.
2021. Yes. Well, yeah, if you wait after the credits, there's a bit of a teaser, isn't there? For the next one. So who knows? Hopefully we're involved again, because I'll happily sign up. And Mark, I hope you're, if you're listening, I hope you're involved as well. Let us know.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't do it otherwise.
No, that's right.
Next time on Unsupervised, we'll be discussing Birds of Prey and the fantabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn with visual effects supervisor Thrain Shebel and animation supervisor Aidan Martin. Thanks for listening.